Chapter 5. The Naturalistic Fallacy. Generations have trod, and all is seared with trade, bleared, smeared with toil, and wears man's smudge and shares man's smell. The soil is bare now, nor can foot feel, being shod. Gerard Manley Hopkins, God's Grandeur. Is doesn't imply ought, but nor does ought imply is. The fact that something exists in nature doesn't mean it's necessarily healthy or wonderful. The natural world is replete with lethal snakes, poisonous berries, and infectious microbes. Nature is no place for carelessness, ignorance, or delusions of immortality. But the naturalistic fallacy, the belief that what's natural is always better, is only fallacious up to a point. While it's true that what exists in nature is not necessarily healthful, it's far more likely to comport with biological reality than something with no roots in the natural world. To deny the probability of an innate congruence of the natural is to adopt the naturalistic fallacy. Consider shoe design. We can choose to ignore what is, the shape and function of the human foot, in arriving at what ought to be a great shoe design. And anyone who spent hours in heels or pointy-toed business shoes will confirm that many shoe designers do just that. We end up with shoes that may look interesting, but walking or even standing in them for long makes for fashionable torture. In Born to Run, his 2009 bestseller, Christopher McDougall explains how Nike convinced generations of joggers to ignore the evolved biomechanics of the human body to run in an unnatural, debilitating way that required the purchase of their expensive, utterly unnecessary products. Great for Nike's bottom line, but this departure from human biomechanics resulted in tens of thousands of injuries and incalculable costs to human health. McDougall quotes a financial columnist who thought Nike's plan was brilliant. They created a market for a product and then created the product itself. It's genius, the kind of stuff they study in business schools. You may think it's unfair to focus on Nike, but McDougall disagrees, writing, "Blaming the running injury epidemic on big bad Nike seems too easy. But that's okay because it's largely their fault." Nike's deftest move, McDougall writes, was advocating a new style of running that was only possible in its new style of shoe, which allowed people to run in a way no human safely could before, by landing on their bony heels. In a profitable extension of the naturalistic fallacy, Nike rejected what is, the evolved design of human feet, knees, and spine, in proposing a new way that human beings ought to run. The results have been disastrous for everyone but shoe manufacturers. Daniel Lieberman has explained that a lot of foot and knee injuries that are currently plaguing us are actually caused by people running with shoes that actually make our feet weak, cause us to overpronate, and give us knee problems. Before the advent of these shoes in 1972, Lieberman has noted, people ran in very thin-soled shoes, had strong feet, and had much lower incidence of knee injuries. Before 1972, humans had been running for a very long time. Our species has evolved many traits showing that our ancient ancestors were highly efficient long-distance runners. We ignore the inherited design of our bodies at our own peril. As Lieberman puts it, humans really are obligatorily required to do aerobic exercise in order to stay healthy, and I think that has deep roots in our evolutionary history. If there's any magic bullet to make human beings healthy, it's to run, but not in the way they teach in business school. McDougall calls it the Nike effect, but Nike is far from alone in following these steps to financial success. They just followed the process to spectacular wealth. We see the same process of replacing the cheap and natural with something worse in the no backyard chickens industrialized farming effect, the unnecessary cesarean delivery on Friday so your doctor can golf on Saturday effect, the growing marijuana is illegal, take these toxic, addictive, expensive pills instead effect, or the breastfeeding is disgusting, use formula effect. Replacing something natural, healthful, and free with something that promises a lot but delivers trouble is as old as agriculture, as old as civilization itself, in fact. It's what keeps the gears of commerce spinning. As early as 1930, American business consultants openly, excitedly explained that advertising helps to keep the masses dissatisfied with their mode of life, discontented with the ugly things around them. Satisfied customers are not as profitable as discontented ones. Just as the shape and function of a human foot are vital considerations in the design of a decent pair of shoes, an accurate understanding of hunter-gatherer experience is essential to living a satisfying, healthy life today. The stability and continuity of the foraging life over hundreds of thousands of years is both evidence of its utility and the original source of our humanity. As Nassim Nicholas Taleb points out in Anti-Fragile, time is the best test of fragility. It encompasses high doses of disorder, and nature is the only system that has been stamped robust by time. We're certainly capable of ignoring the subtle dictates of our evolved, time-tested nature, but we pay a high price for doing so. I can define my body's need to move in favor of sitting here reading this book, but my risk of heart disease, obesity, diabetes, stress-related mental illness, and other ills will increase as a result. We can deny our naturally gregarious sexual appetites, but those distorted energies will find expression in frustrations, resentments, and psychopathologies of various kinds. We can survive on 5 or 6 hours of sleep, but we'll suffer reduced cognitive function, depressed immune response, and a host of other psychophysiological problems. So to those who proclaim our ability to override our evolved nature, I say, well, only up to a point.